Cool. All right. Well, welcome to the Humans of Grappling podcast, number 12. We're here with Jonathan Fuentes. He's a biomechanic and movement philosopher. And I don't know. I don't know if that's how you describe yourself, but yeah. What is it that you do?
I have my own opinions about it that are philosophical in nature. So I guess you could say that. Yeah.
Cool. Well, you teach people how to move well, and you've also found jiu-jitsu along the way. So have those kind of coincided with each other in your journey, or have the
I think for the most part, like, I don't know if like my movement work has made me like a really good athlete on the mats, because I'm not super like trying to like be super athletic like on the mats, although the more like comfortable I feel doing jiu-jitsu, the more athletic kind of things may look. But I would say, like, if I were to imagine myself as like the best jiu-jitsu player that I would want to be, I'm thinking like conservative in terms of like longevity in the sport. So I think of people like Jean-Jacques Machado. I think of people like Gordon Ryan. People who, like, they don't have a super crazy explosive game, but they can still win and feel comfortable and kind of slowly but surely get to where they want to go.
Gotcha. Yeah. I tend to be the same way. I don't have like a big flashy moves or anything like that, or high amplitude throws. Or get slammed or slam other people. That's a topic of contention.
I don't have that like seeing red, let the bodies hit the floor kind of like mentality. You know, like when I go to the academy.
You don't have that mentality, bro?
No, I don't have that mentality. Like when I go to the academy, you know, I'm usually thinking about what I want to work on and listening to my coach and taking into consideration what he's saying and try to work on that a little bit. Sometimes I'll try to work on moves that they showed. My current professor, Jay at Ethereal, he, like in the gym I was at previously, which is still a good gym. I guess I'm like a Creonote or whatever.
Creonche
or whatever.
Yeah.
But really I'm just trying to find a place with like a decent schedule to like do jiu-jitsu at. I've been doing morning classes, but what Jay does, he just kind of like shows you moves and then lets you play like a little bit. Like he'll show you like, you can do this. Like, here's what you can do if you have like shin on shin, and like, he's more conceptual, right? So he'll like show you what you can do in this position. And maybe he'll show you like one or two techniques just like other places. But for the most part, he'll do a little bit more like situational stuff, where like, okay, now literally what I just showed you here for like a minute or two, 5 minutes with your partner, you know, try and like put that into action. And the reason why I like that is I'll try and do that sparring previously, but I'm like I literally just learned it. So I mean, the chances of me learning like all the steps from one step one to step 20 and then do it under high pressure is so low. And sometimes, you know, like I'll hit the move, but like it's just so low. But with that kind of approach, you can work on what the professor is showing you, at least for 5 minutes where you're actually trying to do it. Sometimes I'll do like even more specific stuff. So like for me, I like sitting on my ass on the bottom and you know, just being more aggressive in that open guard where you're approaching the guy, trying to do like an arm drag, trying to off balance him more, you know, stuff that you see like good guys do, but you just kind of needed like someone to kind of, at least for me, like you need someone to kind of explain it to you a little bit. I'm not the guy that's just gonna like do something like, maybe like I hit a move like from an instructional I watched like right off the bat. Sometimes that'll work, but it's better when you have like in the academy, like, just for me personally, I have like that constant, just trying to like work on something, you know, and trying to like improve improve something and try to create like some kind of continuity from like, okay, this is shit right now, and I'm just trying to like make it something, you know?
Yeah, definitely. And your academy sounds like it's a great place to like experiment for you to like you it sounds like you have a you he sets like a direction, but then you can like kind of play with it and like develop what you want to develop, work on what you want to work on,
They're
but
a
also
little
like
like,
focus.
no, go ahead. I don't want to finish your finish up.
But you get to like get this focused work on the situational sparring is huge. It's
Definitely,
super important.
definitely. So like I'm not super like competitive. Like you went to ADCC trials, you competed like at a high level. You
Sure.
know, but it's also kind of like a good thing doing like these in-house competitions. You know, 'cause
Right.
like
Yeah, Mr. Competitor now, you just you said you would never compete, but now you did. What made that change?
I just wanted to see if I could do what I like, basically do what I always do, and
Yeah.
see if I could get the submission and have like
Sure.
no adrenaline doing it.
Sure.
So like my like in the
Okay.
beginning, like my professor's looking
Yeah.
at me and he's like, "Oh my, like do something," and I'm just like chilling. You know what I mean? And like maybe I'll get the submission or like I'm not thinking of points. I'm not thinking of the
Sure.
time. I'm literally just thinking about trying to do jiu-jitsu and feeling comfortable in like uncomfortable situations. Like the first time that I went to the academy, I was working on passing, so I was just working passing with him, and like okay, passing's good, maybe I like pass the guard a little bit, and then all of a sudden he like turned it up really high and he's doing all these crazy moves like shin on shin to like a double Koiji fake to like a double leg, and I'm like, oh okay, all right, so there's levels. And
Yep.
then I rolled with a really big, like 220 pounds at least, white belt, who I'm sure has been practicing for a while. And I was like, hey man, can I, just work on passing, pass his guard a little bit. And then he's like, can I get on top? I'm like, okay, like I don't really have like a bottom game, you know what I mean? Like my bottom game
Yeah.
basically is like half guard, and I'm trying to like earn, add more things to it.
Sure.
And he just passes my guard, right? And he's like so heavy, so crushing. I was chilling there for like 45 minutes. 45 minutes, he was trying to submit me, and he's just sweating all over me. And it's really not something to brag about. You want to be able to get out and like go into an offensive cycle. But hey, the guy was really heavy, and I'm lazy. You know what I mean? Like it's not necessarily a good thing. It's maybe not as bad as some people think if you're thinking of like a submission only, no time limit. So like there's also maybe something to be said about the benefit of feeling so comfortable. He's like telling me, he's like, hey, why don't you like do something? You're like stuck under this guy. I'm like, I'm just chilling, you know what I mean? Like I'm just hanging out here, so that whole like impulse of like go, you gotta do something, I totally don't have that. And I've seen like many jiu-jitsu academies, if not most, especially if they have a little bit of a competition like hunger. They want their students to compete and bring medals back to the academy, which isn't a bad thing because I think overall it kind of makes the jiu-jitsu a little bit better in the whole academy, and
It's
it gives it,
legitimate, right? Like it's validating that your technique
it gives
works.
interesting things to think about. Like if a student gets submitted with something in tournament, it's like an interesting thing to look at, or like what did they succeed at in the tournament, you know what I mean? But that whole like go, like if you're on bottom, you gotta wrestle up and do something and do it fast, do it hard. I'm like not I'm trying, but like I don't have that like that instinct, you know what I mean?
Sure. Yeah, it's a different thing to like, yeah, train jiu-jitsu and you're like training with your friends or you just like are just ch hanging out versus like, yeah, you have a certain amount of time to get work done, to like to go out and win. And competition is, yeah, like a different set
More
of is a
pressure.
different set of goals. Yeah, more pressure.
More pressure,
Wow.
you know. Yeah.
Cool. So, how'd you get started in
Like in
jiu-jitsu?
jiu-jitsu? Okay.
Or I guess either like that. I guess that's what I was trying to get at is like I know that you got introduced to jiu-jitsu through Stevie, but
Stevie.
maybe we should go over Stevie. Who is Stevie?
So Stevie,
the legend.
yes. Yeah, so I had a friend of mine who had a session with Stevie, and he's like, "Yo, that was some of like the craziest stuff I've ever like done. That is so cool. You should hit this guy up. He does this thing called functional patterns." And I'm like, "Ooh, okay, that sounds interesting." At the time, I've been a body worker, like fancy term for basically like a massage therapist that is specializing in rehab and prehab, and they're usually like looking at things from a structural perspective, meaning like, it's not just like hitting the trigger point. They're actually like trying to correct muscle imbalances, and try to get it somewhat to stay there for a longer period of time and heal scar tissue if possible, mobilize joints, potentially take pressure off of nerves. Just so basically a little bit more of a clinical approach to that's hands-on, like manual therapy. When the license to do manual therapy is like massage therapy for me, a physio would be his license is physical therapy. He may do the same stuff I do, but I'm able to do this stuff and learn all this stuff because I studied with all these different people that were physios and osteopaths and massage therapists too. So I went and saw Stevie and I had a session from him, and it was really interesting. Functional patterns is an interesting thing. And he was like HPS2, like functional patterns level 2 at the time. And I thought it was like an interesting challenge. And Stevie seemed like an interesting guy himself. So I would like pay money and go do sessions with him. Just like anybody else, I'd make time in my schedule, pay the money, I'd drive, make time. And I did that for a while until almost he couldn't, well, no, until he left functional patterns, basically. I did that until he left functional patterns. And I was so invested in the interesting things I was learning about with my body, with functional patterns, that when he left, I was like, oh, what am I going to do now? Like, dang, I want him to like show me all this cool stuff. I guess I'm going to go take a functional patterns course. So I'm like, so he's like telling Nadi, because he's friends with Nadi at the time, like about me, like, hey, can you get this guy in a course? Nadi's like, yeah, no problem. I'm like, dang, I'm going to go to course. And I'm gonna like, become Human Foundation certified so I can do all this cool stuff that Stevie was doing to me. And it really didn't take long at all until like I was in the Facebook group for functional patterns for them to basically kick me out and then blacklist me just for asking like basically stupid questions to them, what they interpret as stupid questions. I think it was like two strikes were against me. So I was like, these guys are complete assholes. And I'm gonna go. And that's when I saw an ad for John Haddad's course with Syzygy. So the plan was for me, I had spent enough time with Stevie to know that he was an athlete. Like, this guy's an athlete, he can move well, and he has this deep knowledge about how like self-heal, like correct different stuff on his body and do all these interesting things and understand these exercises similarly to how I was thinking about doing body work on people, but he was doing it applied to like athletic or movement-based activities, and then trying to identify certain therapeutic properties that certain exercises elicit, just like a physio would, except this is more like applied to exercises from if you imagine that you were using the model instead of NASM, you're using anatomy trains. That's basically the whole thing. It's like thinking like a physio, but you're applying exercises as if the foundation was anatomy trains instead of like the NASM model. So I was kind of inspired by his demeanor, Stevie's demeanor, and stuff like that, and his athleticism and capability. And he was doing jujitsu. I had actually done jujitsu many years prior when I was like a dumb teenager.
Damn.
Me and my friend really were like, oh, let's like do a martial art. And like we ended up going to jiu-jitsu class, and I can't even remember why we went to jiu-jitsu class, but the memories when I was in there was so vague. The instructor didn't talk to us at all.
Oh,
He
man.
basically just like let us hang out there, and we're like, I feel like I'm in a like in a crazy daycare where grown people are like fighting everywhere. You know what I mean? Like me and my friend are like hanging out here for whatever reason to do something fun. We have no idea what we're doing. I'm on top of him and mount, and it feels weird. And like I don't understand like anything that's going on. But
Sure.
some of the things I saw in the short time that I stayed there, because my friend stopped going, I was like, oh, well, why am I going to go? I was going for the
Sure.
wrong reasons at the time, and I didn't really know what I was seeing. If the professor just talked to me a little bit and explained stuff, I probably would have stayed.
Yeah.
But what I saw were like these grown men that were moving like lightning fast, like fighting, and the fight would stop. And I'm like, what the
Yeah.
hell? It doesn't look like karate. It doesn't look like, it doesn't look like anything striking based, but there's so much movement, so much kinetic energy, and it looks so lethal. So I just kind of like had that memory in my head. But as far as doing jujitsu, I'm thinking like, I know I want to do a martial art, and the logic was, if I'm doing all this stuff to my body, I might as well like use it. And some of the highest use
Sure.
of the body, if you're not playing a like a, I don't know, like a mainstream sport, is like a martial art, right? And I'm like, well, I don't really want to learn, like, I want to learn a really cool martial art. And I'm like, okay,
Yeah.
well, I want to learn jiu-jitsu. And I probably
Sure.
have heard Joe Rogan talk about it. I had that one experience, that one memory, that one impression I had. And I had the example of Stevie. So I was like, what I'm going to do is I'm going to go take this course with John, and I'm going to try to like just kind of get to know my body a little bit better, so that I don't feel like when I go do jujitsu, like the guys that quit right away. You know what I mean? Where you're just
Sure,
getting
yeah.
so destroyed, and you feel like kind of scared that your body hurts so much. I had the
Right.
confidence that at least if something went weird, that I could keep going because I could kind of like remedy myself. So I
Sure,
got my
yeah.
education with John Haddad out in Germany, in biomechanics. I took his syzygy course, and I did exactly what I said I was going to do. When I was done taking the course, I learned a lot of like Persian yoga with Stevie. He was really into that. And Persian yoga, or how you could also call it like the Indian Akara system. Basically, like people swing maces and clubs when all that stuff antiquity was done by for strength and conditioning for the military class, and also for the martial artists in those countries. The main martial art being, besides like combat martial arts, like it was mainly wrestling.
Right.
So it was like basically like a ancient grappling strength and conditioning system that was super developed. And in particular in Persia, the people that develop it were bone setters, which is like ancient chiropractic, meaning they had like they
Oh,
were operating a
interesting.
philosophy. Yeah. So all the way that the exercises were designed, like the meal and the saying. And this is what I didn't know that till after the fact when I talked with Kashi, who actually like studied in Iran and stuff. When me and Steve were doing things like the Sheena push-ups and stuff like that, we'd get these huge pops in like our body, and they didn't last forever, but they felt like these deep like joint settings. And I'm like, what is going on? It would only happen when we're doing it right. And then when I learned it, like the technique was correct. And then when I learned about that after, I realized that the way that the actual technique of the exercises, very specifically, if you do it just like you see it, just like a technique in jiu-jitsu, like if you study the technique, you get these interesting therapeutic effects. And it really, the way the gravity is working on the body and the way that you're moving, it sets joints in a nice way. So after I felt confident enough, I started going to jiu-jitsu, and it was just like, my first experience wasn't like the best, meaning my instructor, out of all the instructors, since I'm a Creone or whatever the hell the word is, he was probably on the lower end, and I was just getting destroyed like all the time. And like the best advice I was like, hey man, if I'm on top of you, like don't extend your arms out, I can put you in an arm bar, you know what I mean?
Right.
Thing. Like this is
Okay, yeah.
like this is an academy where it's like fist bump, I'm sprinting to your back and I'm trying to choke you like right after we clap hands. You know what I mean? It's like what do you know what I mean? So but the thing why I stopped going there was when the lockdown happened, I paid in full for a year. I was committing to myself. I'm like, yo, I'm not quitting jiu-jitsu. I'm doing this for a year. I'm paying this academy for a year. I'm gonna learn jiu-jitsu one way or another. I don't care how it happens. Lockdown happened. I lost so much money. The guy wasn't gonna give it back to me, and it just puts a bad taste in my mouth. But that's the essence of kind of how it got started. When I first started going through that experience of doing jiu-jitsu, when I rolled with Stevie, I got to actually like see a different side of him. Stevie Linton, you know, if you guys look up his matches on Flow, he's got two good matches. One of them are like they're both good, but one he performed like crazy good. He's got a bunch of matches on YouTube too. He's competed a lot, and I think he was a black belt. He's with Hobson now. Hobson gave him his last stripe. He's got two stripes on his black belt, and he studied with the Ribeiro lineage and some guy that was in the Hickson lineage.
Oh, dang.
Yeah, he's got a really interesting
OG,
yeah, like some OG roots and stuff. So when I rolled with him, it was like a white belt. He's like, you know, like, of course, yeah, he's not gonna like hurt you, but he's also like, he told me verbally, like, I'm not gonna hold anything back. So the way that works is like that was like 12 submissions in like 5 minutes of all different kinds, right? Where like you're like, what is going on? I'm being attacked.
Right.
From every direction at all times, you know what I mean? So that was inspiring enough for me. And the interesting thing was, is like, you felt pretty much safe. Like every time, like where something bad could happen in a submission, you mostly felt safe. But you're still screwed. Like the positional control is so good. And by the time you feel safe, it's pretty much too late. And you just tap, you know, it gives you time to tap.
Right.
But that was inspiring enough for me that it kind of led me to stick with it enough until I was blessed enough to start working with Ryan too. And I still get lessons from Stevie. We worked on some stuff a couple weeks ago.
Oh, but, nice.
But until I was blessed enough to start working with Ryan, and we started going really deep in jiu-jitsu together, and hopefully that continues.
Yeah, for sure. So Ryan Shaula, is that
the
Shaloya? Okay,
Shaloya.
Previous guest on the podcast, but that's kind of how I think I found Stevie first. Like I've been following functional patterns for like years now, but I've never like actually ever done anything. Yeah. And I think they reposted Stevie out at some point, like doing his different swings and stuff. And that
he was a bit of an
like,
innovator.
I started following him.
He did a lot of unique stuff for a couple years.
Yeah.
A lot of stuff that Nadi took and used. But yeah, he came up with a lot of stuff, particularly with maces. Particularly with maces, like using like a lot of OG FP moves, like with a mace. And then also trying to replicate like some of the effects, the chaotic, unstable, explosive effects of martial arts and judo, you know, where you basically like, when you're doing a mace swing, you throw the energy into the ground in some way. Like you literally like you hit the mace on the ground, like, and like you let it go or something like that. Like throw a mace into the ground when you finish the swing to really get the whole like explosive effect and stuff.
Sure. Yeah. And that's kind of, that's how I, that chain like led me to, following you and like kind of like watching the Free Will Gang evolve over time, and eventually I got into the group chat too. But now it's like half jujitsu, half wrestling, and I don't know, other
it's,
people
it's
who just
mostly
don't want it.
Just disgruntled jujitsu players, you know, that that liken themselves to be wrestlers, dissing the people that have a little bit more of a deeper love for jujitsu.
Sure. Exactly.
The BJJ monkeys versus the wrestler bros, body
the wrestling chads, yeah,
the wrestling chads,
the wrestling chads, yeah.
Yes.
So, and I like around the time of the pandemic started, like I was like, oh, okay, like regular gyms are closed. I don't have like regular weights, and regular weights like cost a lot of money. Like those. People were like flipping weights for like $3-4 per pound, like unrealistic, crazy prices at the start of the pandemic. So I was like, okay, let me like buy stuff that's unorthodox, and let me try this like these clubs and maces thing out. And that's how it kind of got started in terms of like, and it totally changed the. I can see like how. Basically, it's built for grappling. It got evolved through like the ages to Like, how have people been throwing maces and clubs and things like that, like back in the
Long
day?
time,
Like,
man, like
is there that
thousands
long
of
time?
years,
So,
thousands, like at
right.
least like to the earliest like antiquity of India. You know, there's like debate, is it like more the Iranian region, the first civilization, or more in some people have this idea of like India being, particularly the Indians, think that they were the first. But either way, it's like you're looking at 2,000 plus years of people using that and like developing like philosophies to the point of like religion. Like in Iran, it's like it's like a religion. Like it's a crazy intense fraternity. And in India, it's one of the unique thing about India is it's the only place where in the caste system, the untouchables, the poorest, dirtiest, like Hassan level people, to the like Brahmins, right? Like Chads, you know, like the Chads, like the highest class, you know what I mean? Where they mingle. So it's like the only place where like they can actually like spend time together and even touch each other, because sometimes they're grappling and stuff, or even healing each other, like doing massages on each other and stuff like that. But yeah, that's one of the only places where those social boundaries like they start to blur. And that's kind of interesting too, because like in jiu-jitsu, there's all kinds of interesting things that happen when with where status and like social standing just do not exist anymore. Like theoretically, a cop, like a deputy, could get his ass beat by an unapologetic crackhead or something like that. You know what I mean? So like anything can kind of happen, you know? And that's
That so that's it. That's interesting that it's been that kind of neutral ground for thousands of for as far as we can like tell,
biomechanics
I
too
think.
is kind of like was supposed to be like that. And in the best sense, like you're just kind of like trying stuff with each other, and you like what you like, and you stick to what you stick to, but you're just like trying to spread and show stuff, you know, with each other. Whereas in the worst sense, it becomes more of like a brand and a marketing thing, which only, you know what I mean? Where you're dis like you're dis you're ruining body culture, like somatic culture, because in society right now, body culture, I don't know, you got the gym, you know, you got the gym bros, and you have all the different like facets of the gym, and then you have like yoga studios, you know, and then maybe you got these other little niches like Pilates and cycling and stuff like that. But there's not a lot of places, which there are now a few of them, and there are always people that have been involved in biomechanics, where it's elevated to a sense where there could be legitimate martial arts, there could be all kinds of things that develop athleticism in terms of exercises. And then these exercises can be designed in a way to provide a number of kind of therapeutic benefits to the person. And they can be curated to that person, and that person can make his own discoveries that help him, you know, get a, you know, ahead of feeling like there's something in the way of himself going with his body, or you know, something that can't be, you know, improved on. So it's like supposed to be a really like empowering, optimistic, activity to kind of involve yourself in, where the mind has more of an ability to give you things physically in your body from your own kind of like intelligence. You know what I mean? Like your mind, it's not just like, hey man, this is how you like rep a dumbbell, but when you're actually studying movement and you're trying to use your body in a certain way in order to elicit certain sensations. That's like a different kind of thing. It's a little bit more open-ended. It's the same in a lot of ways. Like when you're doing good technique in powerlifting or Olympic lifting, there's a sensation that can be felt, and also it should can kind of be looked at objectively. But you're trying to push it further away, like away from just aesthetics or just hitting numbers, you're thinking more of like this subjective pursuit that, for me has been very good for me. I've learned so many different ways of like adding to your body, from swinging maces to like, those ancient systems that we're talking about from India and Persia, and club swinging and classic, functional, like neo-functional training, post-check functional training, where you have like Nadia Aguilar, John Haddad, Patrick Cochran, a bunch of these guys that are really good, codifiers for ways of like changing your body and making it work like a tensegrity, like it holds together better under gravity over time. To like now gymnastics, I'm really into gymnastics. I did the powerlifting thing, the bodybuilding thing, and each time I did it, like a block, I've to gain something from. There's only been a few things that I was just kind of like, eh. I usually gain something from it, like even in a small way, but there's a few things I didn't stick to for a long, long time. For me, Gota was one of them. Like when I did Gota, like I shrank like 10 pounds, and I was like, this is good if I want to be like a long distance runner. But at the time, for a while there, I was trying to beef myself up, particularly for jujitsu, so I could have a more pleasant experience doing jujitsu instead of being like 135, 140 pounds.
Right, you were skinny not too long ago. Like in the relative, like as an adult you were skinny, and then now you're pretty stacked. So
Like I'm 190 now. I've been a 195 loaded. But I'm like 190 lean, and for a long time I was 100, like 100 under, like under 145.
Yeah, and you take a lot of wear and tear as being the smaller guy. That's a wise choice that you did is.
I feel way more safer. My goal for me, like I wanted to be like 210, 215, so even the big brutes, I could just be like, you're not gonna just like bulldoze through me, you know what I mean? While I work on my technique at the same time, I got this layer of meat that I can like have while I work on my technique. But
Exactly.
I just got sick of the grind after like 2 years, and now I'm kind of like hitting the brakes a little bit.
I see.
And working on different kinds of strength. The gymnastics, I got a good feeling about it, like this GSP philosophy that I haven't really tapped yet,
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I think that's important to I mean it's like you're periodizing your different training modalities,
Yeah,
but
that's
you haven't
what
really gone back to like you're trying something, not to like say muscle confusion here, but you're just doing, you're adding new things, you're adding new tools to your tool belt.
taking time to learn things, and adding to those skills. And if I wanted to do any of those things, I could do all. Like I would know how to do a deadlift, do a squat, do an overhead press, all these bodybuilding stuff, or swing maces and clubs, or do all the fancy little functional patterns, moves, the flashy moves. I could do all that stuff, like if I wanted to. It's not like you forget it.
Gotcha. Yeah, and I think that's one of my secrets to like my relative like injury-free career is just being the biggest guy in the room, and generally the biggest guy in the room. There's some like monsters who are like bigger than me, and I do need like those hard training rounds and that those different body looks. But yeah, for me, like I don't use my weight. That's it's a safety mechanism, but also a handicap. Whereas like, okay, I have to like not use all my strength. I have to actively turn everything down. I have to Feldenkrais my way through this technique and just use the minimum amount of effort to move everything.
And I do the same thing, man. Even when, as I was gaining weight and getting stronger, I did the same way. Ryan told me something hilarious during a private yesterday. Because I like clean kills, like checkpoint jujitsu, where like I'm going through. I'm not trying to do like a crazy submission, out of the blue. I like passing your guard, maintaining position, hopefully taking your back. I love taking the back and then choking you from your back. you know?
Sure.
Like I like that checkpoint jujitsu, and that if I'm going backwards, it's just going to a place where you're getting tired. But the whole time, sure, I'm not trying to use too much energy, kind of like what you were talking about. And sure, Ryan, I guess, has a similar approach in a lot of ways, mm-hmm, you know, in his career. And his professor, Rodrigo, he's when he told me this, I laughed so hard. When people would go to roll with Ryan, his professor Rodrigo would tell the person, he's like, "Are you ready for the gentlest beating of your life?" I'm like, that's pretty much how I want to be. Like, that's pretty much, yep, how I want to be. I want to give you the gentlest beatings of your life, where like you are, exactly, definitely going to learn something and get submitted, but it's going to be clean, crisp, technique, mm-hmm, good movement. It's not going to be like anything like, just, you know, within reason, obviously.
Rolling
like
with the,
nothing, yeah, is absolute, but like that's, mm-hmm, the pursuit, right? You know what I mean?
Sure. Yeah, you're not rolling with a bag of wrenches is the term we use. Is
rolling,
you're not getting like, you're not, yeah, getting hit with elbows, or like you don't feel, you sure, yeah, you feel uncomfortable, but nothing's like sudden. Like you can see everything coming and you can't stop it.
Yeah, exactly. I like seeing people roll like, you see John Jacques roll in his academy. He's just so, mm-hmm, slick, man. He just sweeps him and submits him, and he's just like chilling the whole time. But people, right, like him, like Gordon, I like looking at Brian Glick. Like the, oh, stuff, yeah, that he's just so, even Firas Zabibi, like anyone who is training with like a lot of control. Yeah. When he was describing how like GSP, oh no, Chael Sonnen was talking about, mm-hmm, when him and GSP trained, mm-hmm, Chael Sonnen, I think that's how you say his name. I don't know how you say it, but that guy, he would try to get as many reps in of the technique within like 2 minutes, and then you, mm-hmm, switch to the next guy. So like, sure, it made him happy if he got like, I don't know, like 20 reps in, 30 reps, I don't know, in 2 minutes. Mm-hmm. But GSP, you know, George St. Pierre, he would take his time and try to perfect every single aspect of the technique, like every single aspect of the technique. And yeah, when I'm watching people do jujitsu, you can see the technique there, but in live, like real time, there's just like a little bit of just athleticism thrown into every little movement. Like it doesn't look, sure, perfect. Like yeah, if they're going for something, it's not sloppy. But it's things that are being done so fast, and they're not necessarily trying to be too perfect either. But I think there's some athletes that are really perfect. Like people like Mikey, people like Gordon, or when you see, mm-hmm, them, you don't see any like blurry, like edges to like their technique. Everything looks as if like in their training, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And they're just able,
yeah,
to like execute that all the way from like start to finish. It's interesting to see.
Yeah, like when you start jiu-jitsu, all you have is energy. You have zero technique, and that's why like white belts are some of the most dangerous humans in the room, is because they, yeah, they have no idea how to exert this energy, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
They don't have a dots to like draw the line across, right? Or they don't know what the picture even looks like, what they're even trying to do. So, mm-hmm, as you learn technique, like that makes sense. Your observation of if you see yourself using athleticism while drilling the technique, then you're not actually getting to the core of the technique, or you're using athleticism to make up for a lack of technique, mm-hmm, still, even when you're like trying to learn it. So, mm-hmm, that's an interesting point.
Yeah. It's just kind of how I've seen the whole thing.
Sure.
Yeah, and people like That's look cool. at me and they expect like more force. Like they're like, "Oh, he's a big, sure, dude. He's gonna come in hard." Right. And I'm not. But then they start thinking, yeah, I'm like a pussy too. So it's like it's this funny thing where like I just have this idea in my head. Like if you looked at Horian versus Andre Galval and Metamoris, you would kind of think, you know, is this guy soft? You know what I mean? Like, but he just had a different way of thinking about what was going on. You know what I mean?
Interesting.
Yeah, he actually, just had.
I don't think I've actually watched that one, but
dude, you got to watch that match. He's just chilling the whole time in like bad positions, mm-hmm, and like bad positions on Galvao is just like frustrated, you know what I mean? Because it's not he's not meeting him with the same force that Galvao's throwing at him, you know what I mean? Sure, he didn't have all the know-how to like reverse the position and immediately go into a submission like a lot of the Danaher guys do. But he was doing what I consider to be more Helio style jiu-jitsu. Like, you know what I mean? So like Helio, he was renowned for his matches. He was a smaller guy. He would win a lot of matches, but he was renowned for his matches going forever, like a really long time. And he was willing to be in a bad position for a really long time, but eventually he came out on top. And that's why when like Ryan gave me a foundation and pretty good foundation in pin escapes that can still be improved a lot, but a pretty good foundation in that when I just got my blue belt. And that really does prepare you more for like a submission only, where there's no time limit and just what's going to happen. You know what I mean? Because if, I mean, I've had a lot of people, training with me, and I'm sure this happens to a lot, but if you're really good at pin escapes, if someone's not gauging their energy correctly, they'll gas out trying to submit you. You know what I mean? They'll get, I mean, why not? You're using energy. If you're not gauging yourself, it can happen from you trying to submit the guy on bottom, where you're in a dominant position, but you still end up gassing out, or at worst, getting submitted from the guy on bottom. Yeah, but that kind of gave me more of that submission no time limit. That goes back to the point of like a little bit different mentality than like go, there's time on the clock, you got 3 points or no points, and you got to do XYZ, you know?
Yeah, that's I guess my first coach, Dave Camarillo, he said rules dictate behavior. So it all depends what your context is.
Yeah,
Like
exactly.
if you're yeah, depends all the on the rule set. Like if you're in IBJJF or ADCC, like there's a certain amount of time on the clock. Okay, you have to like go and get your points. Versus submission only, no time limit, that kind of thing. It's like okay, yeah, you can kind of chill and like see how it plays out. Like the Gordon versus Philippe Pena match that just happened, and like Gordon w wasn't totally passing right away, or he wasn't. It seemed like he was playing with his food a little bit, or it seemed somewhat even, but he was just kind of like letting it draw out and letting it kind of play out
Definitely.
For as long as Bennett wanted to do it. So,
Definitely. I agree with that.
yeah. So given all this, like, what does grappling mean to you? Like, what is it?
Jiu-jitsu
Or
is,
jujitsu, yeah.
yeah, like jiu-jitsu. Well, I mean, hey, I'm not anti-wrestling. I would like to get better at wrestling, you know, and I would like to
Sure.
learn judo and stuff. So, you know, grappling, for me, it's been so interesting to kind of see the effects that you can't necessarily anticipate on that. What practicing jiu-jitsu over and over, like every, not missing a week, you know, for a lot of people do that for a long, long time. For me, it was for like 2 years. Doing something like that, because I remember listening to Bernardo, and he's like, the best advice I can give for someone is that go train at least once a week. Once a week. Even if you chill and slow down and you're just not training like 4 or 5, don't stop completely. Like, either watch or like go train at least once a week. And I've always tried to do that. Like, even with my cauliflower ear, all my wrestling bros, you know about that. But I did the thing they don't do, and I got it drained and taken care of. But I was still in, I watched, I just watched for one day and just was going to say what's up to everybody, just to kind of be in the environment and still be in that state. But as far as like what it means to me, a lot of the meaning comes after the fact of how it changes you as a person in ways that you don't know how are going to happen. You know what I mean? It's kind of like so many things in life that are important to you, they change you in ways that you cannot anticipate or understand. But usually after the fact, they make you a kind of person that you're more proud to be, and that you may be a happier person. You have more pride in your life and the things that you do, stronger character, more confidence, all the things that the old school Gracies would talk about that what jujitsu would give you. A lot of it is true. Like when you're having a hard conversation with somebody, you know how to like not break, not like fold under the tension. You know what I mean? And you don't, you know, like not to puff yourself up. You can be strong, you know, as who you are. And that in itself is something a lot of people don't have. Like they may be confident or just like feel comfortable, but like the sense of confidence comes from like this different place of you having gone through many difficult challenges where your chemistry and your hormones were being provoked to go into a state of panic and fear, and you chose to remain in control, aware and intelligent as possible so that you can make a decision. You know what I mean? And then you maintain that attitude for a stretch of time, you know what I mean? Or throughout the whole like sparring session or whatever
it's
you're
part
doing.
of your it's like you maintain it over the class time, but then also like if you do it every day, you maintain it over the eventually the course of your life. Like it eventually is part of what you do, who you are.
Yeah, so it fortifies your character, and that's just like a really good thing. Like the whole character thing isn't just this ultra moralistic like good citizen. You know, although you may be nothing wrong with being like a good citizen in the world, but character that I'm talking about is kind of like spiritual. It's kind of existential. You know what I mean? It's kind of like it's a very existential kind of. You know, how do I say this? Like just solidity, like a solidity of self. Like your self isn't going to just fragment and kind of splinter and break under some kind of pressure, but that maintaining of that solidity of self, your sense of self, that sense of awareness and control, isn't this overcompensated thing that we see all the time in the world now, like either in a just ignorant, aggressive person or like a virtue signaling Karen. You know what I mean? Like either of those things, it's like an actual like sense of solidity in your, you know, your sense of self and having integrity. And when you're doing, you know, when you're doing jiu-jitsu, like you do, you get to really be a good person in a lot of ways. You're like fighting someone, you know, and you get to operate and work in the way that you would, that you want to do it, you know what I mean? So that is also interesting that you can kind of empower yourself by choosing your style, you know, the style in which you operate, you know?
You get to know who you are. I think that, like I that that's where like when I first started it in college, like circa 10 years ago. I was in college. I was like very confused about what I wanted to do, who I was, and I kind of like I was very unconfident prior to that. I was like I was a book nerd, or not book nerd, but like just goody two shoes in school. That's all I knew how to do is like make good grades, have good guy friends or whatever. But I didn't really know who I was like to meet, and I feel like that's going through like I did wrestling in high school and that was cool and like that kind of like set me up for this, but doing this like day in day out year round, it really kind of I don't know it's like a it is a spiritual thing like
It's
I'm not a spiritual I'm not a spiritual woo woo
a
kind
kind
of
of
person,
spiritual
but
thing, right?
It is like you it is a ritual that you go and do, and you kind of cast yourself in this like whatever. You're putting yourself in into this tough environment, and you are learning things about yourself, where you can improve, what you're good at, what you can like what you need to work on.
It's
And
infinitely easier to like just not do that and quit jujitsu than to show up, you know?
Sure. Exactly. but you kind of figure out, yeah, who the character, I guess, that is underneath all that, underneath all of the whatever, the baggage that you bring with yourself, like your job, your financial issues, or your whatever relationship issues, or whatever things you have going on, like you, yeah. It's time that you kind of get, can be like, you're focused on one thing, yeah. And it's that self that kind of modulates that.
I love what you're saying. And like when before I spar, you know what I mean? Like, you're thinking like, okay, well, what kind of feeling am I feeling right now? Like, especially when you're going against a guy that, you know, is going to like beat the crap out of you, you know, but you're still going to do your best. Still going to do your best, you know?
Yeah.
You're
gonna
do your best.
Yeah.
Anything can happen. You know what I mean? And you're going to do your best. Anything can happen. But that courage that kind of comes about, instead of like, oh my God, I'm just going to really psych myself up and just throw myself at him again. Like that white belt, like mentality, you know what I mean? But all those like emotional states that you have to like regulate and have control over, whether it's courage or you're going against a person, you're like, yeah, I'm going to roll with this person and I'm going to not abuse this quality that is an advantage of mine. I'm going to deprive myself of that so that I can work on this. And hey, maybe they'll submit me. It doesn't really matter. But I'm giving myself the opportunity where I can learn something, and maybe they can learn something about themselves that is positive, that they could do something to me they think they didn't do, which for them, you know, for them may mean like they just passed your guard, or were close to passing your guard, or they were close to submitting you, or maybe they did submit you. You know what I mean? I took a seminar with Tynan Dalper, and like one of the things he said was, he was like, whoever I'm training with, I try to make it a good training for both of us.
Yeah.
No matter who they are. That's black belt, white belt, kid, woman, large, small. I try to make it a good training session for both of us, you know?
Yeah.
And I try that attitude too.
Yeah, totally agree. Because that's, you're limited by, your training partners. You're not going to be surrounded with ADCC champions, like, or whatever. Like, you have to kind of like train the entire room up. You can't, it's everyone getting better together. So it's an individual art, yes, like in competition, like you're going out there by yourself, but it's the environment that you're training in, it's the entire room preparing you for going out there in competition if you compete. But while you're just training, like you're trying to help everyone else get better, and you're and like I've had to like figure this out like firsthand, just being the biggest guy and like usually the strongest guy, I have to like turn everything down, I have to like nerf myself in order to like make productive roles for me and whoever else is in front of me.
Yeah, and then you get better,
right? Yeah, that's better. The weird thing. It's like, you don't have to be going balls to the wall to, you don't have to have Pujada sparring sessions to get better.
For sure.
We don't need Asai and Jesus every round to get better.
That's fun.
So, yeah, that's cool. I think that's, and that's a major like cultural difference between like jiu-jitsu players and wrestlers. Wrestling, I think it's because you're in the room and it's a team sport, and there's like designations of like, oh, this is the JV team, this is the varsity team, like everyone's kind of competing all the time. Like, it's not as much of a cooperate, like, yes, people cooperate because they're all on the same team, but you're also all trying to compete for the same spot. And versus jiu-jitsu is like, we don't have teams. We don't have like a limited number of team slots. We don't have a 189-pound weight class slot to go out and you go compete for, you represent the team at this weight class or whatever. It's, I think that's it's a very American thing, I think.
That's a good versus, point.
But yeah, anyways, that's the, I digress on whatever, wrestling versus jiu-jitsu. So how has like biomechanics, like, do you see, like, I mean, of course you're using your body in both, but what kind of crossover have you seen between the two, biomechanics and jiu-jitsu?
I think the more I do jiu-jitsu, the more I understand it. But the best jiu-jitsu teachers, they have an understanding of biomechanics, like anatomy of the body and stuff like that. You know, because the reason why the techniques works is because it's short-circuiting biomechanics, which means that you have to, like, reverse engineer how biomechanics works. In biomechanics, the way I usually learn about it, you're trying to get things to move forward so that movement can continue. Whereas in jiu-jitsu, you're exactly doing the opposite. You're trying to get movement to stop temporarily or permanently, or divert movement, and just put yourself in a position where you can continue moving. So it's this thing where it's actually moving in both directions, because you want to keep moving, but you don't want them to move. So it's like, it's working in both directions. So I think I was right on my, you know, in me deciding to study jiu-jitsu, that it would deepen my understanding of, like, biomechanics. Because you really are taking it, you know, really, to a really advanced kind of level. I don't know how all these techniques get innovated and developed. You know, I've never, like, developed, you know, a technique, you know what I mean? Especially ones that stand the test, like, tests of pressure. They work at a world, you know, world championship level. I don't know if John Danaher, like, innovated that shoulder crunch shimigeshi. I think he did, and how much stuff he did innovate. And I know there's a lot of experimentation going on in that room, and I know it's like that a lot of different places in jiu-jitsu, especially if there's really good, like, world champions there. And that essentially is no different than what happens with biomechanics. It's just taken, in my opinion, to a more complex place, because there's way more variables when you have two jiu-jitsu players that know jiu-jitsu, and you're trying to work a technique that works at the highest level against two people that are really good, like world class.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Sure. You're moving your body and their body.
Yeah. So it's like you take two world champions, and you guys both know a lot of jiu-jitsu, and now you're trying to, like, do things that's going to put you ahead of him. That changes according to the person, but if it works on one person at that high of a level, it usually works on a huge flood of people below that, like, huge broad, you know, swaths of human beings that, again, that would work on. But just to give a basic example, you know, with, like, biomechanics and stuff, getting injured in jiu-jitsu, like, the biomechanics is the same. You know, like, when you get heel hooked, your tibia is going in the opposite direction of your femur. You know, when you're getting ankle locked, or, you know, you're taking a joint through a range of motion, you know, like, it's too far, you know, and people get injured from having very limited range of motion in jiu-jitsu, you know, or just wear and tear, you know, over time, or a little bit of both. It demands a lot of knowledge, I think, on how to just, like, remedy the body. One of the most interesting things that have happened is Hicks and Gracie got into a mainstream biomechanics system, like the same systems me and you talk about, you know, that seems niche and avant-garde. He got into a system that is no different in popularity from any of these other ones. And the one he chose was foundation training. And the Rotolo brothers got into it too. And, you know, people look at Hicks and they're like, oh, he's so mobile and fluid. Like, back in his day, you're watching Choke, the documentary and stuff.
Yeah.
If you know a little bit more, you know how injured he's been in the last, like, for a long, long time.
Sure.
And he couldn't remedy that himself, and it crippled his ability to do jiu-jitsu for a really long time. But he's doing a biomechanics system right now, and through working with that system, he's getting to the point where he can do way, way, way more, you know, and like he feels like he could almost like get back to like sparring, or maybe he already is sparring. And you're seeing him do all these kinds of movements and give really good testimonials about that. And he learned about that through, I believe, Henner Gracie, put him onto that. Now the Rotolos are doing it. And you see these jiu-jitsu guys, you know, they're just trying to figure out how to heal their bodies, man. And it's sad sometimes. Like you need some strong medicine sometimes for like a jiu-jitsu thing. Like meaning like you need a powerful systems. You know, and you need to learn as much as possible. Like when I teach someone about biomechanics, usually I just try to show them as much as I can without overwhelming them and do chunking. You know, like this is what mobility looks like. This is what these correctives look like from like a gait-based perspective, or this is what this corrective looks like from this philosophy, and that's what that feels like, and see what they respond to and what they like. The other approach is that you just stick to a system, you know, for a while and you see how it goes. But the thing is, it's like, you know, I don't know if Hickson's gonna run into this or anybody else. When you've been into it like I have, eventually you run into limitations in the system that create like compensations. You know, so when do you know to change? What do you change to? You know what I mean? So I don't know like where that's gonna lead for people when they do become privy to like all these different ways of like taking care of their own body, repairing their own body in jiu-jitsu. But in terms of like doing technique and stuff, like, you know, for example, you have like Mikey, like you want to put the foot on the hip bone here to like do the sweep, because when you're on the bone and instead of the muscle, it immobilizes them. Or like a collar grip on your clavicle, see what happens when they push here and it's here. They teach you this in all the academies, you know, if it's a good professor, he'll show you like this is why we do it this way, and if we do it like this, this happens when we're doing this technique. That's essentially is biomechanics. It's like, okay, I can control you here, but if I just deviate a little bit, I can't control you anywhere near as good, if at all. Now, you know what I mean? So, yeah.
Yeah, so it's interesting that, maybe, well, because, jiu-jitsu, we only show techniques in the class, or we only spar in the class. And then it's kind of on everyone individually to figure out how to unfuck themselves, like, outside of class. Like, when you do jiu-jitsu, you become a roly-poly. You, like, are, like, all caved in like this, and you, like, are playing guard, and you don't, you're encouraged to have this, like, terrible posture because it's, for that context, it's functional. So yeah, you have to, and people prescribe, like, quote unquote, just yoga, just go do yoga or just lift
Some
weights,
bridges.
but,
Do some bridges.
just do some bridges. Yeah, like these kind of blanket suggestions
Yeah, in my
versus like
opinion,
go ahead.
just take the same sophistication that you take toward jiu-jitsu and like that you need to have to get a black belt one day. And just have it towards the same attitude on like all the stuff you're studying, to like learn how to repair yourself, you know?
Yeah, that's cool. Awesome. Well, thank you for coming on and enlightening us with all this different whatever. I totally forget what all we talked about, but it was awesome.
Was a good conversation.
Anything you want to plug, or what? Where
No,
can people?
no
You don't want
plug.
people to find you?
No, exactly.
No. Okay. All
I'm
right. So,
the Uke and Ryan's
you're
Shalor
yeah. Okay.
Unpinnable DVD. Go buy that shit.
Okay. Yeah. Go buy Ryan S's stuff. I totally forget how to say his last name again, but
right.
I'll link it in the description. So,
Thanks,
awesome.
bro. It
Thank
was
you, John.
fun.
All
Take
right.
care, man.
Thank you. See you.